CJCL Toronto.
All right, let's dive in. Leafs had a big deadline. We liked that one. Everybody was fired up about the Leafs deadline. Mm-hmm. That was a good one. Raptors deadline? Oh, no. Let us never do that again. Blue Jays deadline, somewhere in the middle, I would say. Right? They get Jordan Hicks. Everybody's excited. Everybody's happy. The fireballer. They had to use him last night, I guess. I was texting with people. He hasn't pitched in a long time. You got to get him a game. Our boy Sammy behind the glass, he and I are texting. Don't really love throwing your freshly acquired fireballer in garbage time against a hot hitting team who is completely dialed in and now gets a fresh look at him. Didn't really love that. DeJong is fine. It's a decent addition, decent ball player. Guy hits for some power for a shortstop. Doesn't draw any walks. Strikes out actually quite a bit. Strikeout rate is very high. I was looking through it yesterday, like considering his at-bats, I think there's only maybe five or six guys with fewer at-bats with more strikeouts. But he's got some pop. He's right-handed. And he's good Bo Bichette insurance, who I guess that's the real news of the day, that they're not going to lose Bo Bichette. So I'm going to try to be a little measured in this because they did stuff, right? Like, this isn't the Yankees situation where they basically got nada. This isn't the Red Sox who were in a playoff chase and basically didn't do anything. I like that the Orioles added Jack Flaherty. I know he hasn't had a typical season. That's a guy who I think I've always liked a little bit more because he was the rumored Josh Donaldson guy. That had the Jays pulled the trigger earlier on Josh Donaldson, they could have had Jack Flaherty. That was always the thing. I've always viewed Jack Flaherty as kind of like a tough guy pitcher. I've just enjoyed him. So I think that he'll be a good Oriole. I hope he's not, because it's not like that team needs more help. But yeah, ultimately in the division, the Jays did more work than most of their counterparts. It's basically between them and the Orioles. Still didn't do enough. Still did not do enough. And this is the part that's disappointing, is that they were so close. Had they added Jordan Hicks, had they added Paul DeJong, and they added a bat, you'd have felt great. The tough part where you have to measure it against is it wasn't exactly like a bunch of awesome bats were flying around. It wasn't a saturated market. Ross Atkins spoke about it after and said that, hey, some of the guys that we thought were going to be there weren't really there. Some of the guys that were rumored to be us weren't as actually being discussed with us. We'll take that, you know, at face value, but it's just still disappointing. This team has had a hole for months on the right-handed side. And again, last night, they go 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Just again. And now they're 14 of their last 81 with runners in scoring position. 14 of the last 81. And now we're having these discussions about internal improvements, and that's all well and good, right? Like, of course, Vladdy's supposed to hit better. Vladdy's been a massive disappointment this year. In fact, I would actually argue that I can't remember a time where a star has gotten so off the hook for a bad season here in Toronto than what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is doing. Like, this isn't a good year for Vladdy. He's not supposed to be a, you know, 790, 780 OPS guy. He's supposed to be the stud in the middle of his lineup. So yeah, are there guys on this roster that are supposed to perform better? Him, Springer, who's in the slump. Varsho, who's been an absolute nightmare at the dish for this team this season. Yeah, of course. But they needed a right-handed bat. And they didn't go out and address that. And now without Bo Bichette for who knows how long enough that they felt like DeJong was a priority, it's like, your lineup's feeling pretty feeble as you're watching the two guys in the middle slump pretty hard. All of a sudden, you're feeling like Whit Merrifield is the most important guy in your lineup. It's like, don't love that. So yeah, I thought that they needed a power bat. And everybody did. Everybody thought that they needed a right-handed bat that could come in here and actually plug and play a decent amount, especially with Bo Bichette out. And now you're in a playoff race. Like, you're not in the divisional chase anymore now that you've dropped these two to the Orioles. Like, it's hard to imagine them getting back in that one. But yeah, just like, how is this team going to use Jordan Hicks if they can't score any runs? I thought they needed a psychological boost to the lineup, somebody to just switch things up, somebody to shake up the order and throw someone in there. Anyways, they didn't get it done. The market wasn't saturated with it. But either way, it's a failure. They had months to address it. They didn't get it done. A man who knows this much better than I do, 16-year MLB GM, former executive of the year, no big deal on that one. Current MLB analyst and insider for CBS Sports, SiriusXM, and The Athletic, it's Jim Bowden. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, JD. So here's my question. Who got traded? What right-handed power hitter got traded at the deadline that you wanted the Blue Jays to get?
That's the toughest one. I would have said that out of all the guys that got dealt, Tommy Pham would have fit the profile for the Jays, just like a grinder who's had some clutch experience in his past. But it's just so hard to evaluate with this stuff, Jim, because they trade a 17-year-old kid in the Dominican League to acquire him. And this is where front offices, and this is where baseball becomes so difficult, is because however the Mets evaluate that guy, we have no idea here in Toronto who that represents, right? From Toronto's farm system.
Yeah, he's a fringe prospect that probably will never get to the big leagues.
Well, right? Then that's even harder to swallow.
This was a little bit of just a dump. Ed Pham isn't going to upgrade the Blue Jays. I'm sorry. He's just not. I like Tommy. I've had dinner with him. He's not going to move the needle. The problem is this market didn't have a lot of sellers. It just didn't. And the solution wasn't there for Toronto. And it's not that they didn't recognize they needed to write in their power bat. I don't think there was one that was traded that would have been an improvement on what this team is. And I think you nailed it just before I came on when you talked about the stars at the rake. You want to win Vladdy, Springer, the big boys, Bichette. They're the ones that got to carry this team. Mm-hmm. If the stars aren't going to do it, then it's going to be an issue. It is. Look, when you made the trade for Dalton Varsho, I said at the time, good defender, gamer, everyone likes him. He's not going to hit. He didn't hit in Arizona. Why do people think he's going to hit in Toronto? I never understood that trade. I like Gabriel Moreno better. I wouldn't have done Moreno straight up for Varsho, let alone Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Mm-hmm. So that was my opinion on that. But I do think the Blue Jays had a good trade deadline. I think when you get a power arm like Jordan Hicks and even taking a chance on Cabrera and adding, you know, two power arms to the back end, to me, those were good pickups. The DeJong pickup I thought was maybe an overreaction to Bichette going down, and they didn't have a lot of time and they didn't know the medicals immediately, so they re-engaged. But, you know, DeJong, they didn't give up much, and DeJong is a guy that does have some power, and he does protect you if for some reason August or September you have an injury. Because remember, not being able to do a waiver trade, if all of a sudden Bichette or Chapman or somebody gets hurt in August and September, Blue Jays really didn't have any depth to be able to withstand it, where at least DeJong makes the routine plays. You know, doesn't have great range, but he has good angles, and he makes the routine plays, and he's got occasional power. I do think he's more of an extra player than I do an everyday shortstop like he was for St. Louis. But you got a good bench piece there, and it protects you a little bit with injuries. Look, this was not – unless you were going after the big starters, this was not a good trade deadline to be wanting to buy offensive pieces, because the Cubs didn't sell Cody Bellinger, right? The San Diego Padres didn't sell any of their guys. They ended up being buyers. So what was the marketplace? What was the best hitter traded? Jamer Candelario going for a fringe left-handed pitcher to the Chicago Cubs? I mean, it was just I just don't think the market was there. And as much as they needed what you're saying, JD, I don't think that was out there for them. I wouldn't have wanted Josh Bell. I don't think that would have fit. So I don't know
Bell
who else was out there.
Yeah, the guy that was discussed was Teo, and maybe I'll get your answer on why you think the Mariners ended up holding on to him. And yeah, a market that was so deprived of bats. I guess my thing with Pham is, you know, I know he's having a really good season, an uptick season, but he would have been third on the Blue Jays in on-base percentage the second he walked into the clubhouse. Like, that's how much some of these guys have struggled this year. And so, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's going to be internal improvement.
I think with Pham, I don't need to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
The thing I think about, it's a clubhouse culture thing.
Yeah.
Rather than could he baseball-wise help. I think it's more of it's not a fit in the Blue Jay clubhouse.
That's interesting. The same reason the Giants didn't want him?
And I've gotten that from three different GMs.
Yeah. The same reason the Giants didn't want him, right? It's the assault of the player?
Well, it's not that, but it's just, you know, he fits in a certain place and you have to really understand him.
Okay.
You know, I like Tommy very much. I do, and I root for him, and he's a tough guy. But he's different. I'm not sure he would have fit in what Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins like. I just don't think it's a fit in Toronto. I think he ended up in a spot where I think it'll work in Arizona with those young kids. I think it'll work. I'm not sure it would work in Toronto's clubhouse.
Yeah, and
you got a tight knit group there. I don't think it would have fit.
Yeah, and right now it seems like there's been a little bit of at least buzz of guys not being happy in Toronto, and how could they? There's like Springer slumping, and I think he got benched the other night, frankly, because he should have come in a pinch hit situation and didn't. And so, maybe adding that element doesn't help. I will tell you this, though, is that Teoscar Hernandez gets along really well with a lot of those guys. Why do you think Seattle held on to him? Because he was linked to Toronto for quite some time.
Yeah, and look, I had Jerry DePoto on my show Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jerry, will Teoscar be a Mariner on Wednesday? And he said, I can't tell you that yet. So he definitely shopped him. Mm-hmm. But I think when he made the Paul Sewald trade, the hate he got in Seattle from his players, let alone the fan base, was loud. I mean, they sat there going, we're three games out of the wild card and you trade our closer for three role players? I don't think he was prepared after that. I don't think he understood the reaction he would get when he made that deal. And if he had sat there and traded Teoscar, then what would Seattle do? Is that just putting up the white flag and quitting? I mean, it's not a good offense. They have pitching to win. They have enough pitching to get to the playoffs. They do. They just can't score runs because they don't make enough contact. They punch out too much. Mm-hmm. And look, Teoscar, you know what he is. Blowout defender, has power, not going to get on base. Good
strikes
guy.
Strikes out a ton.
Right? That's what he is. Strikes out way too much, which Seattle is dealing with. But, would he have been an upgrade in Toronto? Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're closer to the playoffs than Toronto is. Well, that's not true, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, I will say this, is that Toronto dropping these games to the Orioles and the Orioles just owning them and having, another one tonight. And looking at the Red Sox schedule and looking at the Blue Jays schedule and how Toronto's fared against the American League East, I got to tell you, a few days ago, I was feeling real confident about Toronto being solidified in a wild card spot. They go out and get Hicks, and I'm thinking, you know what? Maybe the division is in play. I started talking division with people, and now I'm like, hold on to that playoff spot. Hold on to the wild card spot. Survive. And just a quick follow-up on the Teoscar thing, though, is, okay, do you think that a little part of DePoto, too, is like, okay, he's feeling the pressure from his players. This is a team that just sold Blue Jays jerseys at their team shop, always has those Blue Jays fans come down and invade. Do you think that they're, like, as a GM, do you feel even that pressure with your group where they go, man, we just played them in the playoffs. We just traded with Teoscar Hernandez. We're sick of their fans. You're really going to help a team above us that we also seem to be having a brewing rivalry with, too? Like, does that play any part in it?
I don't think it plays any part in it, but if you're going to trade T.O. to Toronto, you're going to want to win the trade.
Yeah.
Or at the very least make your team better when the trade is over, which I'm not sure there's was going to be a pathway for that. And by the way, I still think the Blue Jays can win the division, even the way Baltimore spanked them. I still think there's a possibility. I think this is a very underachieving team. Mm-hmm. But I look at the starting pitching, and I look at the bullpen, and I think the starting pitching will perform the last 6 weeks of the season considerably better than the Orioles' rotation the last 6 weeks of the season, because you have more proven starters that are used to going innings 140 to 200, and they don't. And I think that catches up to you. Mm. I mean, that's been my experience in the game for a long time. And, but Toronto's not going to win if the big boys don't perform.
Yeah.
And Vladdy and Springer and Bichette and Chapman are going to have to step up their game. You can't have Whit Merrifield be your best offensive player, which every time I look up, it seems that he has been. Yeah. Thank God Danny Jansen got hot. But you understand my point. If the big boys aren't going to – if Guerrero can't be an MVP in August and September, then wild card is the best you're going to do.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. I think the problem is that now you're asking those guys to get hot, and Bo Bichette's out for an undetermined amount of time. Like, it doesn't appear to be all that bad. Atkins said it was limited structural damage or – they were optimistic about it. They get DeJong, it's going to be fine for a little while, but just watching them last night without Bichette in there and Springer in the slump that he's in, boy, it was a tough watch, Jim. And okay, so, the Orioles add Jack Flaherty, and it's a guy that I've liked in the past. And so I guess to round this conversation out about the deadline, Do you think that the Jays improved their roster more than anybody else in the American League East? Like, between them and Baltimore, who do you think it was?
Oh, no. I like the Rays 1, Baltimore 2, and Toronto 3.
Okay.
I thought the Aaron Civale trade was significant. The guy's made 13 starts. He's got a 2.3 ERA. He's 28 years old. He makes $2.8 million, and he's figured it out. I mean, yeah, they gave up a good hitting prospect in Kyle Manzardo, but they've got Yandy Diaz, and they've got Xavier Isaac coming long-term. So they're all set. They can afford to trade a first-base prospect like Manzardo, who is going to hit with power. I get it, but Savali, to add him to the rotation, I thought was significant for Tampa Bay. And then in terms of Jack Flaherty, I've always been a big fan of him because when he was healthy, he was a one. Now, he hasn't been healthy, right? He's coming back from injury, but he's been posting. And look at his ERA in July. He was good in July. And it looks like he's becoming more consistent because he's getting healthier. Mm-hmm. So to add Flaherty and add Savali to them, I think both of them needed a starter. Toronto didn't need a starter.
No.
But I think both of those starters really helped those two teams. So I like that a lot. And then in terms of Toronto, I love building the back end of the pen. I think Hicks is going to help for sure. So, you know, but in terms of how I think the teams improved themselves, to me it was clearly Tampa Bay 1, Baltimore 2, Toronto 3, Yankees, Red Sox, what did the Yankees do? Kenyon Middleton.
Yeah, no, from the White I was going to say, you can't really grade
them. The Red Sox did Lewis Urias. Like, I didn't want to grade those two teams.
Yeah.
and by the way, how about the Yankees and Red Sox being the two worst teams in the division, not by a little, but by a lot? That's amazing.
Yeah. This Red Sox series that the Jays have coming up is going to be pretty massive. And again, it's another team that's completely owned the Jays this year. The Jays, by the way, are 7-22 against the American League East right now. So,
that's just so disappointing.
Yeah, that's it. It's just like, you know, so it's always hard for me to hear, you know, people say stuff like that where you go, the Red Sox and the Yankees are the worst teams in American League East. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe the Jays could beat them once in a while and then push that record up and actually make that conclusive. Because, yeah, the only reason that the Jays are in the position that they're in right now is because they haven't been able to take care of business against the teams that are most important to beat. So, how would you grade the Blue Jays then? If you had to give them a letter grade for this deadline, what would it be?
I gave them a B+.
Okay. It's pretty decent.
Yeah. I mean, look, you added Hicks, you added Cabrera, mm-hmm. and you added DeJong. You did well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only way you get an A is if you got that big right-hand bat you were talking about.
Yeah. So do you think those two guys
are in a good place? And the problem with the Red Sox is the Red Sox, all their young players all of a sudden hit.
Yeah.
Jaron Duran, Tristan Casas. The pitchers are hitting, Bayo is hitting. Like, all of a sudden, the Red Sox became a much different team than we all thought because all of a sudden, their young players developed at the same time. And they're doing this without Trevor Story.
Yeah, the big money guy. So do you think that the front office here is feeling pressure when it comes to job security? Because they deviated quite significantly from past deadlines, giving up a bunch of future, you know, control for a rental relief pitcher.
No. No, I don't think they're feeling any more pressure than everyone feels when you're in those jobs. I think when you're in those jobs, you don't feel the pressure because it's a privilege and an honor to be the steward of a franchise, and you do the best you can every day you're at work. And then someday someone else is going to come in and replace you. You can't worry about when. You know, it's like life and death, right? We all have an expiration date. We don't know when that expiration date's going to be. It's going to happen. And the same thing with a GM and a team president. You're going to be there. At some point, someone's going to replace you. The most important thing is when you're there, do the best you can for the fans to put your organization short-term and long-term in the best position possible to win world championships. That's what you got to do to the best of your ability. And I believe that Mark and Ross are doing that.
Well, if the Jays don't make it past the wild card round, or God forbid, don't even make the wild card, would you expect changes in Toronto in the front office?
I would expect changes on the team.
In terms of, like, core players?
I would expect changes to improve the lineup, to improve the overall roster. Hmm. You know, they wanted to balance out the left-right, and they wanted to improve the defense. You know, the problem is you need in this new set of rules, you need athleticism and you need hitters. Mm-hmm. You need contact. You need to put the ball in play. You need to be able to run because every walk is a double. Every single is a double now. You got to be able to run the ball down in the gaps, but you got to be able to hit. You know, look at the Yankees. They put together that defensive team, and then when their power hitters don't hit, they can't win. And you also better be careful of age because for some reason this industry started to not read the algorithms on players declining in their 30s, and I don't understand why. No, I understood in the PED era because everything changed, but we're not in that era anymore. And for some reason, people keep thinking people 34 to 40 are going to keep being the same player. And we've got 100 years of data that says it's not true. All you have to do is look at Miguel Cabrera, Albert Pujols, or Robinson Cano, or Joey Votto to understand that it doesn't happen. And all of a sudden, the Yankees are looking up. Stanton can't hit. Rizzo can't hit. LeMayo can't hit. And they're all in their mid-30s. And everyone's acting surprised. Like, yeah. I don't understand why you'd be surprised.
Yeah, the Yankees
like
won.
I mean, at some point, look at the age and say, it could be age in decline. It might not be a slump.
Oof.
Because you, when all of a sudden your hand-eye coordination goes, you can't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why all of a sudden a hitter can be done because, again, there's no perfect timetable. Every player is different. Some guys like Adrian Beltre and David Ortiz were able to play in the late 30s and still perform. But most guys don't. Most guys' decline starts at 34, and it's real.
Well, I have bad news for Blue Jays fans based off of that, is that this September, George Springer turns 34 years old.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah.
I hope that's not the case. You know, sometimes you get a resurgence, but mm-hmm. you can't ignore when a guy that's in their mid-30s starts to struggle. You can't ignore age and decline. Look at Jose Abreu with the Astros and the season he had. We saw the decline start last year.
Mm-hmm.
It is 100% here. And look at the age.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I grew up in the game, right? I was it for a quarter of a century. That's all I did.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times we'd look at the board when this guy started to getting 33, 34. We were looking for the next guy because we knew what was ahead.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Yeah.
I guess when it gets back to the front office, it's a question of how long a runway should you have with a group? Like, it's 8 seasons of Shapiro and Atkins. And if this group doesn't end up making a wild card round, you start to look at it and go, okay, so you're going to make changes again. You're the same guys that made the changes last year. And the changes were a big Varsho trade that, you know, you didn't agree with. They signed Brandon Belt and Kiermaier. Those two things have worked out. But yeah, they lost a lot of their power. And yeah, they've been unbelievably healthy this year, Jim. Like, they're the number two team in baseball with games lost to injury. Sorry?
Hey, I picked Toronto to win the division.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like the expectations here have been high.
That's what I thought.
And yeah. to come up this disappointing.
What concerns me is I don't see the next group of hitters coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, that's the most important. When I look at a franchise in 2023, who's coming? So that's why the Mets did smart things yesterday with Verlander and Scherzer. They got three top prospects. The owner had to pay $90 million for them, but he's got three impact guys up the middle for the future to build. You got to be able to have those young hitters come. It's a young players game this day and age. All you got to do is look at Baltimore, Cincinnati, Arizona, and Tampa to understand the formula that works. You're not going to be able to buy yourself a world championship. You're not going to be able to do it. So you got to figure out in your system. I would be more concerned about why don't we have more hitters coming in our system than I would be worrying about aging players on my big league roster. And I would try to figure out how can I get younger. You know, how can we draft better? How can we sign better international players? Why don't we have better position players? Why don't we have more players in the top 50 prospects in baseball? That's the area that I would concentrate on because that's how you win championships.
Trade a lot of those guys away. The guy who was here before them was pretty heavily criticized for doing the same. Now here the Blue Jays said, Jim, I know you got to run. I always really appreciate the time. I really appreciate the perspective and insight. Have a great show today yourself.
Thanks, JD. Appreciate you.
Take care, man. There goes Jim Bowden. 16 years as an MLB GM, former executive of the year. Like he said, spent a long time doing this. Okay, so a bunch of thoughts off of this. One is he's right. This is the hardest part to criticize him about is that you go, well, JD, who are they supposed to get? Jim knows Tommy Pham. There were teams like the Giants that said, we're not having anything to do with you. That part of the equation was completely left out of discussions about Pham when everyone was throwing his name out. like leading up to the deadline. Get it. The Mariners thing feel like he just explained that one too. Makes it harder and harder and harder and harder to do it. This is the problem. It's like anything in life. When you leave everything to the last minute, stuff can go bad. One little mistake ends up biting you in the ass. Mm-hmm. This was not a new problem. It was an
exacerbated.
No,
exacerbated.
No, Joe. Exacerbated, Joe.
That's what I said. I said no. When you shushed me.
You said exasperated.
And then I said exacerbated when you shushed
no,
me.
No, but then that was wrong too, what you just said. You're doing it wrong again.
Oh.
Exacerbated by the Bobichet injury, that this offense is just kind of in the state that it's in. But they had so much time to figure something out here. It was an absolute seller's market. I understand it. And to their credit, this is something that they've addressed in the past. When the bullpen was trash a couple of years ago, they went out and they made moves. They got Trevor Richards, they got Adam Simber, and both those guys really helped. And they needed to do the same thing. And so I just can't sit here and say, oh, well, nobody would have impacted this team, when right now they've still got Espinal. You know, they've still got Kevin Biggio. It's hard to see somebody who's a right-handed bat that couldn't have stepped in here that wouldn't have been an upgrade on those guys. I'm tired of watching Kevin Biggio strike out. I'm tired of feeling zero confidence about Espinal when he steps to the plate. I don't need to have any more games when there's an injury where they add Ernie Clement to the roster. Like, I'm sorry. But yeah, it's not the uptick superstar splash move that Jordan Hicks was, right? The game changer thing that I mentioned yesterday. And Teoscar Hernandez, I can't kill him for that. If Topoto took him off the table and said, I don't want to mess with my team, I don't want to piss these guys off any further, I got to try to keep this clubhouse together because we're actually still in it. And maybe these American League East teams eat each other alive and trade a bunch of games and we've got an opportunity to go on a run. Fine. Even though what we're saying is the number one thing they need to get rid of was strikeouts. And, you know, the guy who I'm pretty sure leads the league in strikeouts is Teo.
Teo, yes.
Yeah.
143.
Yeah. Guy is a strikeout machine right now.
Yeah, 143.
But like I said, if we're going to play the game of go around the clubhouse and celebrate the Jordan Hicks acquisition and have those guys go, this is what it means to us. It shows us that we're in it and blah, 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 blah. And have all that, you know, pomp and circumstance about the psychological effect of adding those guys. I have to believe. And this is, again, an any walk of life situation. You bring somebody in who is got some expertise at something into a group that is not doing well. And maybe it changes everybody. Maybe people pick some stuff up around the guy. Maybe they change their approach just a little bit. And that's the way that I'm feeling about the Jays. The runners in scoring position thing, I don't know how at this point you can't say that some of it isn't psychological. And that it wouldn't behoove them to have a new guy in there that can hit from that side. And I'll tell you this. You know, Jim's talking about they're not feeling the pressure of the job security and that this is a group that is just trying to, you know, be stewards of the franchise and that the roster will get changes. They don't make the wild card or they lose because they can't hit left-handed pitching. They get into a playoff game against a lefty and they get shut down. A wild card game. That's going to be a really, really tough look. That's going to be a really tough look. The problem I have with criticizing the front office is that you look at it and they go, man, we paid George Springer. You guys didn't all want that? Like, yep, we did. Didn't you guys all know when we were going to pay George Springer that it was going to come with that extra year tax that we had to pay Ryu because this is Toronto and that's one of the challenges of this place? Yep, we remember that. Okay. Did you guys think Vladdy was going to be this guy? Did you think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was going to be a sub 800 OPS guy? Did you think Vladdy was going to only have 17 bombs? And we all would have said, no, we didn't see that happening. Sorry. Vladdy's got to get hot. And now this is going to start to shift because the front office can't do anything anymore. And I know we all get distracted by this. I get distracted by this. And it's a two things can be true situation. Do I think that the front office should have added something? Yes. Do I think that it was a disappointment that they weren't able to figure out a real hole in their lineup when it was apparent for a very, very long time? Absolutely, I do. Should they be accountable for that? Absolutely, they should. But man, the guy making the big bucks, George Springer, you got to start feeling like a star again. And Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who we once talked about being the face of baseball, obviously you can't control the Shohei part of this, but it's like, man, you were a runner-up MVP a couple of years ago. And since then, it has not been that. It just hasn't. They need Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to step up. And now it's feeling, well, not really Leafsy because the Leafs players always have a lot of success in the regular season. But it's like, yeah, you're going to have to start showing some star power here if this team can actually make something happen. The problem is we've got such a sample size now of not star power, not superstar power outside of home run derbies that it's hard to have a lot of faith in that. And especially when you add the Springer part of this, which is like, yeah, he's going to be 34 in September. Like he's a month away from his 34th birthday, and Jim Bowden just said it. Got 100 years of data telling us that that's not good for baseball players. Although good old Brandon Belt continues to still find a way, even though he strikes out a ton too.
35 years old.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just... I like adding to the bullpen. It's awesome. And this team is going to be in tight ball games because they can't score. But man, oh man, it's going to be frustrating if they're using a bunch of these Jordan Hicks regular season innings when they're trailing baseball games. And when they're in these battles against American League East teams and you're going, well, we got to pitch them today. The way that they did yesterday. That is just an absolute nightmare. The offense has to be better. This is just not sustainable to continue to hit this way. 14 of 81. Again, I'll say it one more time. 14 of 81 with runners in scoring position. They're third worst in the majors. The only teams worse, Joe.
The Royals and the Athletics.
Bad. So incredibly bad. And yesterday it was just even funny, even like when they were in garbage innings, the game was over and they get a runner on second and the top of the order is up.
Big earn.
And I'm like, okay, guys, just do this for the stats. Do this to get off the offer, you know?
Yeah.
Just one of you three, bang one in here. No, 0-3. You just feel, it was funny too, because the broadcast didn't even mention because those guys got to be so exhausted about saying over and over and over again. And yeah, no runners in scoring position. It continues to be an issue for this team anyway.
They're 0 for 17 against Baltimore in these two games.
I think that there's an incredible amount of pressure down the stretch here on the front office. Again, that the path for them to be criticized is very clear. Like they have Springer stay in the slump. They struggle against left-handed pitching. Because they just like there's not a good way to balance out their roster now against that. Like it just isn't. They've got too many lefties on this team, and yeah, one of them. It would be fine if Varsho would have not been, an absolute nightmare at the dish, but he is. So you got to basically accept that. And Bowden kind of laid it out, which is why did you expect him to become something that he wasn't when he's what 26, 25,
26.
Yeah, he's 26 years old. So it's like, yeah. All right, fine. You thought there was something more there. You were wrong. Tough one. But yeah, then there's going to be a ton of pressure on Vladdy. I think that this is going to become a bigger and bigger and bigger story. Because it just has to be. Like, this guy needs to carry this offense. Bo Bichette is not there. There's no waiting for Bo. There's no attention for Bo for a couple of weeks. If he continues to struggle, he continues not to just, put the ball out of the yard. People are going to start to get critical. I think that it's going to start to change a little bit, and it's not going to be just all happy vibes all the time. It's going to get harder and harder to see commercials where it's like, Vladdy's just happy all the time. You're like, maybe hit. Maybe get on base. Maybe stop grounding out to shortstops. That would be great. Anyways, all right, quick break. I do want to talk about Ryu. I do want to talk a little bit more about DeJong. But yeah, that was tough to hear Jim say that two teams in a division he views getting better. And two teams, and they got luckier because they needed starting pitching, and there was way more starting pitching than there was, like, help at bat, which is odd considering that's not usually the case, right? Starting pitching is usually the big-time premium. It's tough to come by, and you saw the names that were flying around. It's like, yeah, Scherzer's gone, and Verlander's gone, and Flaherty, and Savali, who, yeah, I got to admit, I always forget about, I saw the Savali move, and my brain doesn't register it as like, oh yeah, it's a real sexy move. That's a real good move for them. It's just like
Guardians
Rays
action.
Yeah, Guardians Rays trade, sexy stuff. But yeah, that's two teams in a division that are ahead of them that really help their areas of need.
Well, and the Sox are only a game and a half back, right? And they got a three game set coming up against them. So.
No, that's honestly, that's going to end up, I think, being maybe the season. A couple of years ago, 2021, when the Jays missed, when they played the Yankees, remember, right at the end of the season?
Mm-hmm.
Gerrit Cole versus Robbie Ray. The duel of the century, the duel for the Cy Young and a playoff spot. And now the Jays, I think, find themselves in a pretty similar position with the Red Sox. It's earlier, obviously, and they'll have time to make that up, and anything can happen, and blah, 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 blah. But it's going to be pretty deflating around here, and it's going to be pretty hard to believe that they're, yeah, going to hold on to that spot if they drop another game to the Orioles and then lose a series against the Red Sox. And then you still don't know when Bo Bichette's going to be coming back to try and save you, try to put the entire team on his shoulders, the entire offense on his shoulders, him and Whit Merrifield. Oof. Yeah, I'm not with Bowden about the division still being in play. I think that's done. I think that your chance was this series against Baltimore to kick their ass, and you didn't do that. They kicked your ass.
They're seven and a half just, games back now.
Yeah, they just slapped you around in your own ballpark in front of your fans. And I'm going tonight, and I got to tell you, boy, if it's another one of those, don't let the camera find me, you know? Like, don't let me get caught on camera, please. I'll
just
be
sour.
Memed into oblivion. I will never survive the memings. Anyway, quick break. Let's come back. Let's talk about Ryu. All right, the news of the day has shifted. According to the Canadian press, alcohol consumption is now allowed in 27 Toronto parks.
Mm-hmm.
Until October 9th. This is only a pilot program.
Pilot program.
It's a pilot program because we need time to determine whether residents in this city who have been drinking in parks for as long as I've lived here, but also in much bigger numbers since the pandemic, can control themselves, mm-hmm. can find a way to behave. You behave.
Mm-hmm. Behave within the guidelines.
We've got a couple of months here, people. Everybody be chill for just a couple months until the pilot program's over, and then go back to just your outrageous park experiences. Honestly, there's so many dark things looking back on the pandemic, so many things that just did not hold up, but I'll never forget being on the right side of history with all the rich suburb people that scolded all the young people who went to Bellwoods, mm-hmm. and they were like, they were peeing in the park. They peed in there. They had alcohol outside, and they were peeing in there, and there was some garbage that was left as they had their cocktails in their backyards with their swimming pools. That was a nice time. That was a fun time. You people that got outraged about that, it's good luck for you. I'm sure you don't regret that one. Yeah, let people drink in the park. I live near a big park here in the city. I enjoy being able to go over there, sit down on a sunny day on the side of the hill, and crack a beer, mm-hmm. and it would be great, just great, if it was not possible for someone to give me a ticket for that. It would be awesome.
Right.
Really, really nice. And I know, I don't think that there's been a ticket issued in 2023 for drinking in a park. I think I read that somewhere when they were discussing this. But it's just hilarious that this legislation already came up, and they decided not to pass it. They were like, nah. We cannot trust you adults with alcohol in parks. Outside, be inside. You got to get inside. If you're not inside. Again, this is a city that's completely built on patios too.
Yeah.
That's the entire thing to do in the summer. What do you want to do here in the summer? Give me five activities that you do that do not include alcohol. Yeah, you know, it's impossible. No, this is a drinking city.
Yeah.
You go to a patio and you drink. You go to a park and you drink. You go to a Jays game and you drink. What do you do? Like, where do you go? What do you
Toronto Island, you drink.
Yeah, you go to Toronto Island, you drink. And it was like the idea that it was like a park. Ooh.
Go to the X, you drink.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that there's a lot of, most of the things that people say are quote unquote Canadian, like, you're so nice. I don't think that's true.
Really?
I met a lot of Canadians. I don't think. Most of them are nice, all right? I think that people are polite to a degree.
Right.
Quietly. I think Canadians, you know, do a lot of trash talking in the shadows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't think that's nice.
Inferiority complex.
I've traveled the world. Nicest people are Australians.
Okay.
Like, not even close.
I could not disagree. But anyways, hold on. Don't get me in trouble.
Don't say it.
What I do think is Canadian is not being nice. I think it's most people here don't want to bother other people. They don't want to create a ripple. They don't want to create a wave. You want to make sure that it's just, yep, that you're not bothering anybody else. We're good at the golden rule in terms of treating others the way that you would want to be treated when it comes to public settings with strangers. And that's why people think we're nice, is that when we go to a resort, we're not usually going to be the ones that are just like, loud, I paid obnoxious. Good money to be here.
Like loud and obnoxious.
This is my place to be. Yeah. That we're not that. We're kind of, that's why, in fact, it infuriates me because there's often times where you'll see someone who, if they are doing something in public that is absolutely unacceptable, nobody steps up and says anything. Everybody's quiet because everyone's frozen. They're going, we don't know what to do in this situation. There's a person that's doing a thing that we're not used to.
We don't want conflict.
This person isn't falling in line with the thing. What do we do? We're lost. We have no clue what to do there. That's what Canadian is all about. That's our number one thing, baby. I'm sorry. It's not maple syrup. It's not beavers. Beavers were a big deal, but no, not anymore. Would you say polar bears?
Well, yeah.
Okay, it's not polar bears either, Joe.
Moose.
It's not being nice. Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah, I think you're 100% right.
Yeah, I know I am. I know I'm right about this.
I hate saying that.
But is it not bothering other people considered, like, nice? Like, couldn't that fall into the same category, though?
No, they're not synonyms, but they're adjacent.
Okay.
And so that's the thing. You can confuse someone with not bothering them with being nice. But then they get home from that thing like, you wouldn't believe
the guy trash talking to their
That's what I mean. It was like, they've go back to the pandemic. Everybody fell in line with everything, every single thing, all the time. We were like the number one country of just like fall in line.
Yeah.
And then what were all of your conversations like in private?
Bad. These are way too much. What's going on anyway? This is getting pretty crazy.
That was it. Everyone's doing that thing, man. We know what I'm talking about. Anyway, yeah. So drinking in parks, legal, sweet. Thank God. Again, it's already one of those things. It's weird. It was like weed here where everybody was smoking weed from a million years and no one was getting in trouble for it. And then all of a sudden it was like, it's legal. And we celebrated that. We're like, yeah, but just do the same thing with drinking in parks. Yeah. What are we doing here? We got a huge drinking culture in Toronto. It's a city that, again, is completely predicated on, hey, where are you going to go for a drink?
Yeah.
Either a patio or the island or, yeah, you go, you name it.
Yeah.
So let's just end this stupid stuff. Like, yeah, you shouldn't have to tuck your beer under a thing. And you know what? Fine. If someone's being a jerk in the park and they're hammered and they're doing it at an inappropriate time, do something about it. Don't just ignore it like we all do as Canadians. So anyway, good for them. Pilot project. Pilot project. There's a sick part of me that wants them just to revoke it and be like some snot, you know, some snotty politician. Like, no. I went to a park and I saw people.
Disgusted.
And one guy went to pee in a bush. And that's where the squirrels pee, not the humans.
I can also confirm that no tickets have been issued for public drinking.
See, there we go. Anyway, all right, back to the Blue Jays. By the way, I'm going to do best bets again tonight, heading down to the park. So make sure you follow on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Going to have stuff there all week. Going to get back into the gambling groove here. I got cooked on UFC on Saturday. Blahovich. Wow, that's it. Yeah, Blahovich. My God, it took me a second to get there. He won that fight. He just, Israel Adesanya's right. He sat down against the cage. He was gassed at the end. He cost himself the win. Guy had three takedowns. Each round was top control for most of it. Mm-hmm. The strikes weren't that different. Yeah, it was stupid. Like that was another bad decision. And that's you always are a little scared when it's the guy the UFC wants in a tight fight. You never feel like that one goes your way. But either way, he should have stood on his feet. Instead, he was out of shape. That's a wrap for Jan. Anyway, got killed on UFC. Been back doing okay on baseball. And I've been avoiding the Jays recently. So take that for what you will. Tonight, we'll see. Oh, my God. I'm living in fear for tonight. It might be a happiness hedge night. Anyway, the Ryu thing was the one positive from yesterday. And I know that the start was, the start, the old phone started, bing, 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 bing. Oh, boy. That was abhorrent behavior by Blue Jays fans, I got to tell you. I know everybody's frustrated. I know the deadline passed and people didn't get what they wanted and we're tired of getting, you know, our asses handed to us by the Baltimore Orioles. But for him to get the Bronx cheer for his first strike on batter number three, rude. That was rude behavior. We're better than that. And I'm a person who endorses booing. Like, I'm not one of those, you know, clutches at pearls sports guys or gals who does the whole, like, they're trying their best. How does the booing help? Like, shut up. You've obviously not paid for tickets for way too long, yeah. If that's your position. I'm sorry. You've been in a press box for way too long. You've been not going down to any stadiums. It just fine. Stay out of it. You don't know what it's like to be a fan anymore. So don't involve yourself in the discourse. The players, do you think that this helps? Yeah, I do, because I did it.
Actually, I do, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, you're allowed to boo. It's fine. It's fine to boo. Booing is fine under the right circumstances. The guy hadn't pitched in 14 months. He was a Cy Young runner-up the 1 year that he was fully healthy here.
Yeah.
By all accounts, he's just the coolest dude. And I still, like, I saw him coming out, and I was fired up to see Ryu again. Yeah. I love Ryu. Ryu is my guy.
Yeah.
And
oh, you see the number 99, yeah, and it's like, let's go.
It hurt me to see him get absolutely tattooed the way that he did as soon as he began that start.
Yeah.
But, man, like, can we give him a second? Can we give him a second? Bronx cheer, first strike. And then another cheer when he got the out. So it was like a double Bronx cheer. It was a sour crowd. It better be nicer there today, all right? Let's all be polite. Let's all, see, we're not nice.
No,
proof.
We're not.
We cheered the Kevin Durant injury, and we booed our own guy, basically, who was coming off a 14-month injury.
It's not a good resume.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's so nice here. We're all the nicest people who ever lived in nice land. Anyway.
What did the Blue Jays ever do to Ryan Mountcastle? He's the greatest player in the world against them.
Yeah, he's absolute superstar.
Yeah.
He's got such a good name, too. Mountcastle.
Ryan Mountcastle.
Every time he hits one, I'm like, yeah, duh, he's Mountcastle.
Yeah.
You didn't see his name? He's a hulking dude named Mountcastle. I'm sure his life is all right.
He rakes.
He's probably doing okay. He's probably fine. Just fine. Anyway, yeah, sucks. But, the Ryu thing, though, now does present something. Because Kikuchi's going tonight. I hope he performs well, but it would be pretty weird if, you know, Kikuchi has a rough start and he ends up being the guy that gets bumped, but you want to see more what you have with Ryu. Like, you have to. I know that start wasn't brilliant, but there was old Ryu there. Even to finish the first inning, the curveball that he threw with the sink on that one to get the punch out, I went, oh, sweet. Love to see that. I just, the way I'm looking at it right now is it's not a bubble situation with Manoah, but like, Why is he not in a competition with Manoah and Ryu? Like, Ryu, Manoah, Kikuchi, these three guys are in the mix, and, like, you're looking for one of them to step out and still be a stud. The other two guys are completely, you know, or sorry, the other three guys, they're already out of the mix for this. Like, they're locked in for who they are. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I think that it's going to be an interesting kind of healthy competition with those three down the stretch, but you can't do the full six, man, because you got to win these baseball games. Like, you're not in a position to do too much trial and error, so I do wonder what the leash is on everybody. Anyways, not going to do pod today. I'm going to wrap this thing up. Got a busy day. I'll be back tomorrow with Good Hour, where Ennis and I are going to break kind of everything down, and I'll hit all these points with him. Anyways, subscribe to the podcast, follow him on Twitter and Instagram, @JD Bunkus. I'll see you tomorrow.